I'm Gabby, and you are listening to Most Wanted.
Hello and welcome back to another episode. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Amanda.
How you doing this week, sis?
Doing very well. I want to tell you an exciting story that I think you will appreciate.
Okay.
My husband is a little bit older than us, so he didn't watch all the Disney movies, particularly the Disney Channel original movies.
That's tragic.
Yeah, that we watched as children, kids, teenagers. Anyway. Yesterday, fully yesterday, because last night I made him watch one. So I gave him a bunch of choices. We had settled between Johnny Tsunami and The Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, okay. Which one did you guys watch?
So last night we watched The Emperor's New Groove.
Yes.
He was laughing so hard. And I think I was still laughing harder, even though I've seen that movie so many times.
But he was laughing so hard.
And he recognized like all the voices, which was really fun. Because it's David Spade, John Goodman, Eartha Kitt is Yzma. And then the guy that plays Putty in Seinfeld, what's his name? Patrick Warburton plays Kronk.
I recognize the voice, but I would have never guessed that's who that was.
Yep. And so he recognized all the voices except Eartha Kitt. I had to show him who Eartha Kitt was. But it was so funny. And I like that movie is just so funny. There's a part where he's like, ah, yes, the poison for Cusco. Cusco's poison. The poison especially for Cusco. The
yes.
Specifically we made for Cusco. And she's just like, I get it.
yes. Oh, gosh. That movie's so good.
The one where he talks to the squirrel, too. Just like.
I forgot about that. Did you know that they made like a spinoff of just Kronk and the squirrel?
No.
I'm pretty sure that because he's like the backpacking counselor yes. for the kids. I think it's like a spinoff. I'm pretty sure.
So anyway, we were having a very good time doing that. I am hoping that next time that we have a free evening, he will watch Johnny Tsunami.
Oh, I haven't rewatched that yet, but it's on that new podcast.
Yes, it is. It's the next one. I haven't watched The Descendants yet. That's the actual next episode, but I figured I'd throw that on while I was doing thesis stuff tonight. Yeah, but that's the next one. It's Magical Rewind. Is that what it's called?
I think, probably.
Yeah, so the one with Will Friedle and Sabrina Bryan. So I've been watching them as the episodes come up, but I'm a week behind. So Descendants and then Johnny Tsunami. What's really funny is, remember a couple episodes ago, I feel like you cut it, which is fine. I was not very pleased with Cheetah Girls when I rewatched it. I am in the minority. People love Cheetah Girls.
Did I cut it?
You might not have. I can't remember now.
Okay.
But people love Cheetah
Girls. Well, maybe I cut it because I love Cheetah Girls, yeah, and I was probably like, and screw you.
I was like disappointed in the acting, but it's really funny because when they rewatched it, Sabrina Bryan's in that.
Yeah.
And when they rewatched it, they're like, Will Friedle had never seen it. And he's just like, this is fantastic. And I was like, oh.
I read the books and the books were really good. That's all I have to say about that.
So anyway, it's been a joy to rewatch some of these movies and hear them talk about them.
Also, of course, they're called Disney Channel Original Movies. They referred to them as DCOM.
DCOMs.
Duh. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell is DCOM? It took me way too long to figure it out. But yes.
And then the other ones are like My Date with the President's Daughter was their first one that they covered.
My Date with the President's Daughter. Oh, that's why. That's why I cut it. Because I sang.
Yeah.
I have to stop doing this. Are you ready to get into this week's episode?
I am.
Okay. Is this one of those where it's like, I'm really happy we had fun for the first 6 minutes of this, and now we're really going to bum each other out?
It is. Yeah, I'm trying to like, okay, take a deep breath and get back into the right mindset here. Okay, so it's the second week of Women's History Month. And like I said last week, we're doing a series on young women whose lives were cut too short. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this up front and then talk about this a bit more at the end of the episode. This one... It's like, this one's a local one to me. I remember this case. I you know, it's a Minnesota, North Dakota case. Mm-hmm. Another one? Yeah, I know. It ended up being 2 weeks in a row and I didn't even really plan that. But yeah, it's to me, this is local. To me, this is something that sticks out in my mind. And in doing research for this case, I realized that it actually got a lot more national attention than I realized.
Really?
Because it was on our local news So, like, I don't think I realized how it had really gotten everywhere.
Right. Yeah, so, of course.
That made it very interesting to do the research because everyone talks about it as like this national case. And I was like, to me, it wasn't.
Right. Yeah.
To me, this was something that happened not very far from home.
Right.
So that was very interesting for me to like re-look into this.
What? I know you're going to get into it. What year was this? Because this name is not familiar to me at all.
This was 2003.
Okay. Oh, so I was 10. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. Okay.
Yep. Which is probably why I remember it vividly. I was 14.
Right.
And you maybe don't as much. Just that age difference would have been kind of crucial for something like this.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to go to the Avril Lavigne concert, and you were when I was 10.
Yes, so, it was right around that time frame. So we can talk more about this. And like, I think I kind of covered it in the middle and then again at the end as like impact that this had on me when I was growing up and just like probably a lot of people around my age and a little bit older. But this week we're covering the murder of Drew Shadeen. So I'm going to ask you, you kind of already said, do you know anything about this?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. So I'll go into sources.
I do know one thing. She had the coolest haircut for the time. That's all,
yes,
I know.
Yes. She had short hair. Like, yes. All of the photos are of her with short hair.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
Looked great on her. And it's such a 2003 look.
Yes.
I'm obsessed.
Absolutely.
That is what I know. That's
it. Yep. So sources for this week include articles from ABC News, the Bismarck Tribune, CBS News, the Twin Cities Pioneer Press, the Duluth News Tribune, lots of tribunes, Cairo 7 News, K-I-R-O, Valley News Live, and Fox 9 News. I did watch an episode of 2020, which actually aired less than a year ago.
Oh, wow.
So a very recent episode of 2020. And I listened to episodes of two podcasts, one called True Crime All the Time and one called No is a Sentence.
Oh, yep. Wow.
And then I did read a little bit of Wikipedia. Content warnings for this episode include assault, sexual assault, murder, and discussions of the death penalty. So now I'm going to go into first Drew Shadeen's life and then a little bit about our suspect slash bad guy. And then we'll go into the crime after that.
Okay.
So, Drew Shadeen's life. Drew Katrina Shadeen was born on September 26, 1981. She has an older brother named Sven. Very Scandinavian names.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
And she spent the first few years of her life in the Minneapolis area of Minnesota. Hmm. Drew's parents got divorced when she was 5 years old, and her mother, Nancy, eventually remarried and became Nancy Walker. Her father, Alan, was still very involved in his children's lives, and they often would spend all their holidays together with Alan visiting the Walker home for the holiday celebration. So a very amicable divorce.
I love that.
I do too. Eventually, they all moved up north, and Drew and Sven spent most of their formative years in Pequot Lakes, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And so they grew up in like cabin country.
Yeah.
But they lived there full time. Drew was active in sports in high school. I think she played basketball and golf and was also a talented artist. Hmm. In the episode of 2020 that I watched, her dad showed off some of her art, which is still hanging in his home. And it's actually like really good. It's like from when she was in high school and it's very good. I'm pretty sure Drew was homecoming queen her senior year. Like she was just, she had this smile that lit up. Like, you know, you hear that stereotype in like murder cases. She had a smile that lit up the room. Hers did.
Yeah.
Like if you see the pictures of her, hers really did.
Wow.
So she was friendly. She was extroverted. She was a really good person all around. After high school, Drew decided to attend the University of North Dakota, located in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and was working on a degree in graphic design.
Ooh.
Geography tidbit for later in the story. Much like last week, Grand Forks is also on the border of Minnesota and North Dakota, mm-hmm. which has the smaller city of East Grand Forks on the Minnesota side of the Red River.
Oh.
So very similar to the Fargo-Moorhead situation we had last week, mm-hmm. but this week it's Grand Forks and East Grand Forks. At UND, Drew is a member of the Gamma Phi Beta sorority and was working two part-time jobs during her senior year as she saved money for a summer trip to Australia after her graduation.
That's so cool.
I know.
What a badass.
She had plans. Like, she was set to go. Her first part-time job was as a sales associate at Victoria's Secret in the local mall in Grand Forks, which is called the Columbia Mall. And her second part-time job was as wait staff at the El Rocco nightclub in Grand Forks.
Okay.
So she was also dating a nice guy named Chris Lang, who had recently graduated and had moved to Minneapolis for a new job. So all of these details are part of the story. That's why I'm mentioning them.
Got it.
Yep. Okay. So we've got this beautiful, friendly, blonde college student, barely 22 years old, planning for her future. So now I'm going to tell you briefly about our perpetrator, because it's important to know about this truly unwell man's background in order to understand this story.
Okay.
So this section I called The Prior Crimes of Alfonso Rodriguez Jr.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So Alfonso Rodriguez Jr., I'm going to call him Rodriguez for most of this episode for ease.
Okay.
Was the son of migrant farm workers who traveled between Crystal City, Texas and northern Minnesota for work in his early childhood. They settled in Crookston, Minnesota when he was around 8 years old, so he mostly grew up in Minnesota. This information is not an attempt to stereotype or anything like that. I mostly just wanted to point out that he came from a very hardworking family and that English was probably not his first language. And I think he struggled a lot in school because of these details.
Yeah.
I also know that he's admitted to this, that he used drugs very heavily in his youth.
Oh, man.
And I'm not talking about weed here. Like we talked about marijuana and stuff. Yeah.
Meth.
Acid, PCP, maybe meth, I don't know, but they specifically mentioned acid when I was watching or listening to one of the things about him. Okay. So like stuff that probably altered his brain chemistry.
Absolutely, especially at a young age.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So this is the bit of background on the person that we're discussing. When Rodriguez was 21 years old in 1974, he committed his first sexual assault.
Oh, God.
He asked a young woman to give him a ride home one night, and he raped her at knife point in her car. While that case was moving through the court systems, Rodriguez raped another woman. So he really wasn't helping himself. It clearly was a compulsion. Like, this is something that he just did a lot.
Yeah.
So he spent a few years in a treatment program and was released. And then committed another rape at knife point.
Oh my God.
Which this time there was also, he also kidnapped the woman and stabbed her during the assault. So this woman thankfully got away and reported him. She's okay.
Okay.
But like he's escalating.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. So this time he spent time both in prison and in a treatment program. And because he completed the treatment program, when he was released in May 2003, they did not put him on supervised release. There was probation. He was just out.
I have a question quick.
Yes.
A treatment program for, was he still on drugs or was this like because of the sexual assaults?
Sexual assaults. They were trying to like treat the cause of the sexual assaults, which I don't know if I believe in that.
Yeah.
That's something I didn't do any research on, but it was treatment for like the sexual assault compulsion.
Okay. I wasn't sure if like, since he had a history of drugs, if he was still doing the drugs while doing it. So they were trying to think if like, maybe if he's in a treatment program for the drugs, then he would stop doing the raping. The rapes.
I don't think there's evidence that he was still using drugs in adulthood.
Okay. I was just curious.
And I actually don't know 100%.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm nearly 100% sure the treatment programs were for the sexual assaults.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, released in May 2003, not on probation.
Cool.
Yep. So no one was checking in with him. Nothing.
Wait, you get released after stabbing someone?
And three rapes that he was actually— three rapes
at knife point and like, you stabbed
charged
someone.
Charged with.
And yes. You get let go? Wow, we really don't give a fuck about women, do we?
Nope.
Cool.
So, in total, by the time he was released in 2003, he had served a total of 23 years in either prison or treatment programs.
That's not long enough. And it clearly didn't
but
work.
It's also a very long time, if you think
that
about
is a very long time.
He was probably in his 40s. That's like half his life.
Yeah, that's true.
But like, no one's checking up on him. What are we doing? Like you said, people clearly just don't care about women at this point. So when he was released, he was listed as a level 3 sex offender in Minnesota.
Is level 1 the highest or is level 3 the highest? I never actually know.
1 is the lowest, I think.
Okay.
So level 3, what I know is that level 3 meant that he was highly likely to reoffend.
What? And we're but just sure, going to let yeah, you go.
No supervised release.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sounds super reasonable.
Oh my God.
So we're about to head into the main part of our terrible story, which means that I think we should take our ad break now. If any of you are full-time remote workers like me, you know the value of comfort. And comfort with a positive message is just next level. That's why I'm proud to be an affiliate for Kind Cotton, a wonderful and cozy clothing brand that spreads kindness and good vibes wherever you go. I've got the softest crew neck kindness sweatshirt from their Pride line that I've almost worn out. And Lauren has a gorgeous mustard yellow long sleeve tee with Be Kind embroidered on the front. It's just the cutest thing. And I recently added to my collection during Hispanic Heritage Month and now have a kindness tee in the most beautiful purple color in Spanish. It's just delightful. And the best part? For every purchase made, a book is donated to a child. Those regular podcast listeners out there know that I love to read and have sometimes read entire books for a podcast episode. So this is my favorite thing about this brand by far. Check out my Kind Cotton affiliate link in the show notes and on social media and use the promo code AMOSTWANTEDPOD at checkout for 10% off. Okay, so let's talk about the day of the crime.
Okay.
On November 22nd, 2003, which was a Saturday, Drew Shadeen worked a 4-hour shift at Victoria's Secret in the Columbia Mall.
Okay.
When she got off work at around 4 p.m., she told her friends that she was going to head home to her apartment for a while because her shift at El Rocco didn't start until 9 p.m. So she had like 5 hours to kill.
Yep.
So Drew first went to Marshall Fields before she left the mall to buy a Christmas gift for her mom. She bought her mom a black purse. And then on her way out, she called her boyfriend Chris on her cell phone as she walked to her car. And we're talking like those big brick Nokia phones.
I was like, 2003 cell phones were a vibe.
Yes, they were huge. And yeah. Yeah. So on this day, she was wearing a pink shirt. I think it was a pink collared shirt and a black pea coat over it. So in surveillance at the mall, there's a bunch of surveillance footage of her at Marshall Fields. Mm-hmm. She's pretty easily recognizable. She's got that short blonde hair and then like this bright pink shirt with a black pea coat over it.
Well, if she was working at Victoria's Secret, exactly. I think.
I think they have to wear pink.
I think so.
Yeah. So Drew at the time was driving a red 1994 Oldsmobile Cutlass.
Very cool.
Yep. Yep. And she was still talking to Chris when she unlocked the doors and put the Marshall Fields bag inside. This is November in North Dakota. It's 4 p.m. So it's probably cold. It's probably getting dark.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
It's probably still not, like, it's not nightfall, but it's probably, the sun's starting to go down.
Right.
Chris then remembers, so she's put the Marshall Fields bag inside in the back seat. Chris then remembers that she said, okay. And the call disconnected.
Oh, God.
He didn't immediately call her back, which is probably what I would have done, but I have anxiety. So, like, yeah. I think I react to some things differently than some people would. He said he didn't hear any sense of urgency in her voice, and he assumed the call dropped because it's 2003.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, no. And she lives in North Dakota.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh, God.
He didn't have any indication that anything was wrong. About 3 hours later, Chris got another call from Drew, but this time all he heard was some static and what sounded like the buttons were being pressed on the phone before the call disconnected again. This was a bit more concerning because he not only didn't hear back from her, but also this was just weird. And at that point, Chris called Drew's roommate, which kicked off the rest of the story.
Okay. And I suppose 2003 texting really wasn't a thing. So
no, like the screens were teeny tiny, you know, they couldn't even hardly read texts if you could send them.
Right. Oh God.
Yeah. Cause I think I didn't really start texting on my brick Nokia until like 2005, 2006.
I have no idea.
Yeah, because that I didn't get a phone until I got my license, which would have been in 2005.
Yeah. And I got your hand-me-down when you got a new one.
Yep.
Did you go straight to a BlackBerry after your Nokia?
No, I had a black flip phone for a while.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yep. Yep. So I started college with the black flip phone.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's the era we're working in here. Mm-hmm. You're right. Texting probably wasn't
a thing. Because my assumption is like, if my call gets disconnected, I shoot a text, I could put my phone down. Not hearing from someone for 3 hours would be normal, but it's 2003. Texting mm-hmm. probably wasn't a thing.
Yep.
Also, no offense to him. I know he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
He's a guy.
Yeah.
He probably really didn't think anything of it. He's like, oh, well, she was at work. You know, she's busy. She said she was going home or whatever. So yep. I'll talk to her later.
To text and drive, maybe. I don't know. Or call and drive. I don't remember what the laws were at that point.
Yeah. But. I mean, okay.
Yeah. So once Chris called Drew's roommate, Meg, he explained the weird call. And she realized that Drew had said she was coming home, but never made it home.
And it's 7 o'clock now?
Yeah, it's probably about 7 o'clock. So they were like concerned, but like, what can you do? She's an adult. It's 3 hours. You know, they're like, oh, that's weird. But it wasn't until she didn't show up for her shift at El Rocco that people were like, this isn't Drew. Like, this isn't who she is.
Like, yeah, the last... She said she was going home.
Yeah, she said this. She follows through with stuff. Like, she doesn't skip shifts. She doesn't tell people she's going to be somewhere and then not show up. Like, that's not who she is. So at that point, Meg called the local police. And I can't remember now if it was the Grand Forks police or, like, the University of North Dakota police. It was one of the two. It might have been I think it was the Grand Forks police because they go to the mall and the mall's not on campus. But.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yep. So reported Drew as missing to the local police. An officer went to the mall to see if he could locate Drew's car. And at this point, it was after hours. So her car was like the only one left in the
lot. Yeah, it would be. Oh my God.
Yep. Her car was kind of messy, the officer noticed, but she was a college student. My car was always messy when my car's still always messy.
So I was like, my car is very messy.
Yeah,
right
my
now.
Car, what am I talking about? And the more concerning thing was the doors were unlocked.
Oh, God.
The Marshall Field bag with the gift from her mom inside was in the back seat. So she clearly had been at her car.
Yeah.
And on the ground near the rear driver's side wheel was an empty knife sheath.
What the fuck?
So the officer had a feeling in his gut that that was important. So he picked it up and brought it to the station.
Good for you.
Yep.
Mr. Police officer.
At this point, police called Drew's family, her friends, her boyfriend, and none of them had seen or heard from her since she was speaking to Chris on the phone in the parking lot of the mall. Her dad at this point, all of them knew like this isn't like her. Her dad called her Drewzy. So like he was just like this wasn't like Drewzy. So he hopped in his truck and he drove all the way to Grand Forks.
From Pequot Lakes
to just, he felt like he needed to be there.
Yeah.
And an important part of this story is that a blizzard had started.
No.
So he was driving to Grand Forks in a blizzard. He made it fine.
Yeah.
He went to the mall parking lot and he basically sat vigil in his truck next to her car. The whole night.
And that makes me want to cry.
I know. On the episode of 2020, they were interviewing him and he said, like, I wanted her to come back so bad that I was just going to wait there until she did.
My God.
Yeah. It's totally heartbreaking. So the blizzard made some of the initial searching very complicated. So that's why the blizzard is important to remember.
Goodbye evidence, goodbye people out walking, you know, driving.
Yeah. Yep. So in the days following Drew's disappearance, once the snow had stopped, people did start doing ground searches. It was mostly volunteer led. Like by the time this case gets to the, like, gets going, thousands of people are doing ground searches in both North Dakota and Minnesota for Drew. So we're gonna get into that part of the story too. But just like, even if you didn't know her, you saw her picture and she felt like your friend. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's why I remember this, because like, it was this picture of someone who looked like the people I went to school with. Literal smile that lit up the room.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a cliche, but it just is true in this case.
Yeah.
So anyway, these ground searches are happening. Within a couple days of her disappearance, a black shoe was found on the banks of the Red River, right under a bridge that spans over the river.
Is this the same Red River that Savannah? Yes. Oh my God.
Yes.
I can't. Okay.
Okay. Yep. It was positively identified as Drew's shoe by her roommate, Meg, who said that she wore those shoes as often as Drew did, so she would recognize them anywhere.
Oh my God.
And like, I had a roommate like that. Like, I can relate to that. She would wear my clothes all the time, and she usually looked better in my clothes. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
So like, I totally relate to that. She would probably be able to pick out any of my clothes and shoes as well as I would have.
I was going to say, I didn't have a... I was that roommate. Hi, Deja. Sorry.
So just like, I read that and I was like, this, I think this is why this has always just resonated with me, this whole case. So also important to note, they found the shoe on the Minnesota side of the Red River.
Uh-oh.
So they had mostly been searching in North Dakota at this point. They expanded over into Minnesota, and this was within a couple days. So like, not very much time had gone by.
Oh, not only is this guy disgusting, he fucked up.
Yes.
He crossed state lines.
Yes. So within the first week that Drew was missing, both North Dakota and Minnesota were contacted regarding their sex offender lists, as the missing shoe plus the knife sheath gave everyone just a really bad feeling. They felt like the shoe in particular were like, something really bad has happened here.
Yeah.
They bored through the ice on the river and like, looked in water and everything. Like they were, I think they all knew at this point they were looking for a body. It was too cold.
Yeah.
Additionally, one of Drew's ex-boyfriends, along with a guy who would frequently call Victoria's Secret looking for Drew, and a guy who used to ask Drew out a bunch at Al Rocco's, all these people were interviewed.
You can't call Victoria's Secret looking for an employee.
Yes, but apparently there was a person that they thought had like an accent that was calling looking for her. And I think what they determined was that it was a collection agency because she had like missed a payment on her credit card.
Okay.
And like it ended up being nothing, but like they were like, who is this? This seems too timely.
Yes.
And she had like an ex-boyfriend that the breakup was really bad, and he like would show up at her apartment a lot and have to be turned away by her roommate and stuff. So they were really interested in him. They did, of course, question Chris, Drew's boyfriend, but he was in Minneapolis. He was hundreds of miles away.
Right.
Like they cleared him very quickly. And they ended up clearing both those other people as well.
Okay.
So I will say at one point, The ex-boyfriend was probably the closest to them being like, sketchy, what is going on here? They did find a black pea coat in his closet. So they were like, you know, sir, why do you have this? But it ended up either not being hers. Pea coats were big back then. They were big fashion stuff back then. So it might have been his pea coat too.
Right.
It's just, all I know is they showed a picture of like a black pea coat that they found in the boyfriend's closet.
And this was suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. And then it was like, break for commercial.
Yeah.
But once they'd cleared all of these people, they went back to these sex offender lists. And in Minnesota, two names popped up as potential, like matching the MOs of what's going on here.
So you can keep a list, but you can't keep an eye on the people on the list?
Apparently.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't have any answers for you.
Okay.
I wish I did.
I mean, I'm happy there's a list, but like, are you kidding me?
I know. So one of the two had an alibi, was cleared very quickly. And the other one was Alfonso Rodriguez Jr. So you probably are already feeling this. This man is going to frustrate you. So let me preface all of this stuff, the early parts of the investigation and him. It's going to frustrate you. Rodriguez, having been out of prison for about 6 months, was living with his mother in Crookston, Minnesota, about 20 miles from Grand Forks. Mm. Police brought him in for questioning, obviously, and they asked him where he was that day. Rodriguez said, "Yeah, I was in. I was no, I was in Grand Forks." No, he said, "I was. Oh. I was in Grand Forks that day."
Oh,
yeah, I was at the mall.
Oh,
and he said, "I was shopping for some jeans. I went to Target, went to the hardware store, and then I went and saw a movie. The movie started about 4:30. Could have been me." So, police were like, "Let me get this straight. You're telling us you were in Grand Forks.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling us you were at the mall.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling us it couldn't have been you because you were at a movie?" And he's like, "Yep, exactly. You get me,
sir."
That's why I was like, I knew you'd be like, "What the fuck,
sir?" You might as well have said that you were at home with your mother watching TV.
Yes, I know, exactly,
sir. That's a terrible alibi.
It gets better.
Wait, did he provide a movie ticket?
No, but
okay.
They asked him, "Well, what movie did you go see?"
Don't remember.
No, he said Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which is a very specific title. I think the movie was released that year.
Okay, I was going to say, was that even in theaters? I'm assuming it had to be something, but...
So one of the officers then, like he was in the interrogation room, some other officer was called the mall and called every other movie theater in Grand Forks. Not a single one of them was playing this movie that weekend.
You big... dumb idiot. Okay. What else you got, sir?
So I just wrote, not a great lie, my guy. At least check the movie listings.
Exactly.
So police asked Rodriguez if they could search his car. And he said, sure.
Hmm? Sir?
I'm laughing because, like, this is so absurd.
Sir.
Yeah. So he gave them permission. Full consent search of his car. He didn't say they couldn't look at anything. Like we talked about the consent searches last week.
Yep.
He didn't give him any restrictions.
Did he have a knife that was missing a sheath in his car?
He actually did.
Oh, seriously?
But it took him a while to piece that together.
Okay.
Because it was like a knife that didn't need a sheath. Like the sheath was something you could like put on your belt or something. But the knife itself, you could have it without the sheath too. So... they found a couple knives. One of the knives had blood on it.
What?
Yep. They found a woman's shoe. My understanding is it did not match. Like it wasn't the other
pair. That's almost worse. You have another woman in your car? Are you kidding me?
I know. Yep. And most damning, they found blood spatter everywhere. It was really tiny droplets.
Oh my God.
So they were like really, really close to the seat. And one person was like, I think this is blood. And then once they found one, they saw it everywhere. It was on the windows. It was on the seats. It was on the ceiling.
Well, and stabbing someone is like, it's so.
Yeah. So we're going to get back to that.
Okay.
The like what they think the blood was from.
Oh, God.
They did test it. It was Drew's.
Yeah, of course it was.
So, and then one of the knives that they found ended up belonging to a set with the sheath that was found in the parking lot.
Of course. Okay.
So you had guessed that. So they did find that knife in the car. They didn't take it because they didn't know what they were looking for at the time. But then they went back and found
it. Chair. Metal chair outside. Haven't said that in a while.
It's been a while since you said that. So at this point, it looked like police had found their guy.
Mm.
But they had not found Drew.
Mm.
So.
Oh, this is one of those that we're going to have to give you a stupid fucking deal so that you tell us and then you're going to lie.
It's not actually.
Okay.
But it's similar to it. Like, I can see why you jumped there. Absolutely. Okay. But that's not what ends up happening here.
Okay.
So the question, this part I'm calling the search for Drew. Mm. The question remained, where was Drew and what happened?
Mm-hmm.
So search parties combed through the tall grasses and snowdrifts on the Minnesota side of the border for weeks. Mm. And they didn't find Drew anywhere. So this is one of the parts of the story that I remember as it was happening. So I'm taking a little break to like go back into like me remembering this case. I could never have told you Rodriguez's name. I couldn't have told you any details about this case. But I remember her being missing. I remember people searching for her for months. I remember that she'd been taken from a mall parking lot. Like,
oh my God.
I was 14. That was terrifying to think about someone being snatched in the daylight from a mall parking lot.
Were you, I know you weren't driving, but were you and your friends allowed to go to the mall by yourselves at this point? Because yes. I think I was probably like 12 when I was doing that. And it was just a different time now. Like now I can't even, like, I don't even want to go to the mall by myself right now.
I have distinct memories of before being able to drive, like me and one friend and my friend's mom driving to the Mall of America and her mom letting us like roam basically. But like, you know, she drove us there. She was present.
But she wasn't with you.
Mm-mm.
So if you don't meet at this store at this time, I guess I'm just going to wait a little longer and assume you lost track of time.
Yeah.
But what if that's not the case?
Right. I know. So like this was terrifying.
Right.
And it was largely this case along with the one that we're covering next week.
Yeah.
If you want to get ready for that. That I was like petrified to go anywhere and do anything.
Yeah.
As a teenager.
Yeah.
Because this was so scary to me. It was these types of cases made me afraid to walk across our incredibly safe college campus at night.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wear my hair in a ponytail. I'd walk with my keys between my fingers.
I remember like, all of this. Like, and this is stuff that I still do.
Yeah. Yep. And the perception of this has shifted quite a bit in the intervening years, meaning that like, if you had a ponytail in and you happened to be kidnapped, they're not going to blame your ponytail anymore.
No, that's true.
So like the perception has shifted a bit, but the fear is still there.
Absolutely.
And this case just, I think it kind of started everything for me and like having to reframe how I felt about my own safety in public.
Yeah.
Because who would have dreamed that? Like, I walk and talk on my phone all the time. And, like, who would have dreamed that you're in broad daylight at a mall, and all of a sudden, then you're not?
And maybe you shouldn't say this, but I walk around the mall with my headphones in all the time.
Yeah, I do, too. I walk around I have my headphones in all the time.
Yeah, I do it because I don't want people to talk to me.
Yes, me too.
But that also means I can't hear anything.
Yeah. So one thing I've done is I have my headphones set as to not be noise canceling.
Okay.
So I can hear traffic noises and stuff like that. And often
you're a runner, so that makes more sense. Yeah.
And often when I am out like in parks and stuff, I do have the dogs.
Yeah.
Which helps a little because at least one of them I would like to think would protect me.
Of course they would.
This was like stranger danger to the absolute extreme.
Yeah, of course.
And just like I said, I didn't realize this was a nationally covered case. To me, this was not very far from home. This was
It could have been our, not really, but like it could, in your head, it could have been our mall.
Yeah,
it could have been someone that you knew.
Yeah,
yeah,
yep, yeah, exactly. So just I remember the massive efforts to search for her, and the whole state felt her absence, like the way it was covered. Everyone was just so sad.
Yeah.
Jump forward a little bit. On April 17th, 2004, so about 5 months, 4 or 5 months after she went missing, Drew's body was discovered just west of Crookston, Minnesota in a ravine.
Oh, God.
The snowdrifts had finally started to melt, and she was found under all the snow. So this is pretty horrific. Listeners, please feel free to skip ahead if you don't want the details of what happened to Drew. Drew was found naked from the waist down.
Oh my God.
Her hands had been tied behind her back. She'd been beaten, stabbed, and sexually assaulted. She had two large lacerations on her neck. The larger of the two was like 5.5 inches long.
Oh God.
So like, basically her throat was slit.
Yeah.
There was also a rope around her neck with the remnants of a plastic bag, like, tied in the rope.
Didn't that happen to Savannah, too? That there was a rope around her neck and there's evidence of a plastic bag?
So she was found in, like, a plastic, in, like, plastic wrap.
Oh, okay.
And there was a rope around her neck. But I don't think it was like a suffocation thing. Like,
okay.
This like was this assumed is... to be. Yeah. So they were, it was suggested based on how they found her that there had been like a shopping bag.
Oh,
that had been tied around her neck, but the bag like disintegrated and stuff in the weather.
Yeah.
The medical examiner couldn't determine her exact cause of death. As the laceration in her neck, the plastic bag, or being left alive in the elements, all could have killed her.
Right.
She had been 22 years old, which was the same age as Savannah.
Oh my God. I don't mean to keep drawing parallels. These are obviously very different cases. It's just like, just because it's fresh,
We were telling these back to back. They're very close together.
Yeah.
Like geography wise too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is totally not planned.
Yeah, totally by accident.
Yeah. Hundreds of people attended Drew Shadeen's funeral. Mm. And in the months that she'd been missing, thousands of people had went out in the Minnesota winter to look for her.
Mm. I suppose, yeah, all of their crown searches are in the dead of winter in North Dakota or Minnesota. That's
horrible. And like, think about Western Minnesota and North Dakota, the wind. It's just
drifts. Yeah.
It's just drifts.
That's true.
So, yeah, like, even if you search one place the day before, the snow might look completely different the next day. Like, it's just, it probably felt very hopeless.
Yeah.
I believe Drew was buried in her hometown of Pequot Lakes, Minnesota. So, I'm going to move on and talk about the legal case against Alfonso Rodriguez Jr. So first, authorities had to attempt to determine where Drew died because it mattered for the court case.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the blood spatter found in Rodriguez's car.
Okay.
The amount of blood was more equivalent to, say, a nosebleed after getting punched in the face than a possibly mortal neck wound.
Okay.
Or a stabbing.
Okay.
So that's kind of how they picture it happened. He punched her in the nose and her head like snapped back.
Yeah.
And like, that's how it spattered.
Yep.
Like it did. That's their guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously not proven.
Right.
That indicated to them that she was still alive when she was forced into his car.
Yeah.
And the hard part then is like, well, where did he take her? And he was living in Crookston and her body was found just west of Crookston.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to pretty reasonably guess that she was taken from North Dakota but died in Minnesota.
Oh, God.
This meant that this crime met the criteria for Rodriguez to be charged under 18 U.S.C. 1201, which is known as the Federal Kidnapping Act or the Lindbergh Law.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the origination of the Lindbergh Law?
The Lindbergh baby was stolen from his home. Charles Lindbergh's son?
Yep.
Was stolen from his home and was it the middle of the night and ransom, and I'm pretty sure the kid was almost immediately killed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that this would be an interesting one to cover at some point.
Oh, actually, I hate this story, but yeah you can do it.
It's a terrible story. We can put it in the future a bit.
Yeah, it's so sad.
It's so sad. But I think I'm trying to remember if it was the Lindbergh house was in New York and he was brought to New Jersey, or the Lindbergh house was in New Jersey and he was brought to New York. But he crossed state lines. That was the Lindbergh part of it.
Yeah.
And that's why in the 1930s, Congress wrote a law making kidnapping that crossed state lines a federal case. Because when you're trying to determine jurisdictions like that, like,
it has to be.
Yeah. Do you charge where the kidnapping took place? Do you charge where the body was found? What do? You make it federal. That's what you do.
I was like, both, but yeah, so you make it federal.
Yep. And because the Lindbergh baby case was so shocking and horrific to people, they made the penalties steep.
Yeah.
For this law.
That's why I've heard many, other cases of kidnappings where they're like, oh, you know, kidnappings aren't that serious. It's like, you clearly don't know anything if you think kidnappings aren't that serious.
Yeah.
They're very, very, very big deals.
Yes, especially if you cross state lines.
Yeah, it's a very big deal.
It's a very big deal. So, because of this, Rodriguez was charged federally with kidnapping resulting in death. And that opened him up to the possibility of the death penalty.
Death penalty chair. Outside in the sun. Metal chair.
This decision to charge Rodriguez at the federal level made this the first death penalty case in either North Dakota or Minnesota in about 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Since neither state allowed the death penalty at the state level.
Right.
It was decided that the U.S. Attorney's Office in North Dakota would try the case rather than Minnesota, I think because they could do it closer to Grand Forks versus down in the cities.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Or Duluth. I think those are the two options.
Okay.
So that case went to trial in the late summer of 2006. So on August 30th, 2006, a jury convicted Rodriguez of kidnapping resulting in death. And on September 22nd, 2006, the same jury recommended that he receive the death penalty.
Wow. Am I stupid to think that the jury does the death penalty? I thought that was always a judge.
So it sounds like, and I wonder if this is something that the person on trial can choose. It's specific that it says the jury recommended that he received the death penalty. And then 6 months later, on February 8th, District Court Judge Ralph R. Erickson formally sentenced him to death.
Oh, okay.
So I wonder if they like give, this is what we would recommend you sentence him as. And then the judge has the ultimate discretion and decision.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So as far as I know, he is currently imprisoned at the United States Penitentiary Coleman in Florida.
Okay.
He used to be in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Oh.
And we're going to kind of get into why he moved. So while Rodriguez was on death row, he admitted that he had killed Drew Shadeen during an interview with a psychiatrist on June 28th, 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So 10 years later.
Yeah.
Like, took him fucking long enough. But so.
Was he, oh, I'm innocent, I didn't do it, even though
I think so.
Oh, God.
He was just like, you can't, like, it wasn't me, you can't prove it. I mean, and I didn't read anything about he said. I would guess he didn't take the stand.
Yeah.
He pleaded not guilty and then said nothing else. That's my guess.
Yeah.
But I have no insight into what the court case was, like what his defense was. Federal trials are not allowed to be recorded. So.
Oh, really?
So you'd have to like get trial transcript. There's never any camera in there. Sometimes they have audio. They probably didn't in 2006.
Interesting.
Yeah, but that's why for federal trials, you always get, like, the drawings. Because, like, the court sketches, there's never cameras. So the court sketches is, like, all you get. So attorneys for Rodriguez obviously appealed all of this. And it went to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. The interesting thing about this one is that the same judge who sentenced Rodriguez to death had been appointed to the Court of Appeals between the death sentence and when his case got to the Court of Appeals. So the same judge was now sitting on the Court of Appeals when Rodriguez's case was appealed.
Oh, well, that seems like a conflict of interest.
A little bit. I'm surprised he didn't recuse himself, but he did not. And maybe this is why. Two aspects of the case were heard by the Court of Appeals. First, the medical examiner for Ramsey County, Minnesota, who testified at Rodriguez's trial.
I've been there. Ramsey County.
Yeah, as have I. his testimony was deemed unreliable, misleading, and inaccurate. And I read a little bit that I didn't write down. Apparently, they're reviewing like a dozen cases that he testified in at the state level. And have overturned several other either convictions or sentencings.
Oh my God.
Because I guess he had a tendency to talk out of hand.
Oh God.
So I guess I looked into this specific one a little bit as well. And it sounds like the report that he made, like the medical examiner's report, was all above board. But when he was sitting on the stand, he gave some opinions about what he thought happened.
Oh, yeah, you can't.
Based on the report, but those opinions weren't written down and weren't official. They were opinions.
You can't do that.
Yes. So I think it was him that, I think he shared the stuff about the nosebleed,
mm-hmm.
which, like, fair, but you can't say that's what happened for sure.
Right.
And then I think he determined that it was the plastic bag that killed her and she, like, suffocated to death.
And you don't know that.
No, but I think he said on the stand that that's, like, the guy put the plastic bag around her head while he was raping her and she died.
And man.
You don't know that, though.
Yeah, you can't say that.
No. So that was the first thing that was appealed.
And yeah.
The second thing that was appealed and that was heard by the Court of Appeals was that Rodriguez's original attorneys did not have him properly evaluated in terms of his mental capacity.
Uh-oh.
Because the judge thought that maybe he could have successfully used an insanity defense. And they didn't ever have him evaluated.
Interesting.
Yep. So, based on these appeals, Rodriguez's sentence was overturned in 2021 by the same judge who had originally sentenced him to death.
Okay. Wow, that's okay.
It's just a weird circumstance.
Yeah.
But the conviction was not overturned.
Right.
Just the sentence.
Right.
So on March 14th, 2023. Prosecutors announced they would no longer seek the death penalty for Rodriguez.
I'm sorry, what was the date?
March 14th, 2023.
And when does this episode come out? It comes out on the 14th. So
oh my lord.
So 1 year ago today.
1 year ago today, they announced they were no longer seeking the death penalty.
Wow.
And then on May 18th, 2023.
Holy shit.
He was resentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Okay.
So the Terre Haute Federal Prison is death row.
Okay. Yep.
And then Florida is, they have a maximum security prison in Florida. And that's where he was transferred to once he got off death row.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. I had no idea that the dates were going to line up like that. But
we've been kind of timely recently.
I know.
It's starting to kind of freak me out.
It's been a little freaky. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Drew's legacy.
Yes, please.
There is a memorial garden in Drew's honor in Pequot Lakes, Minnesota, and UND is also planning a memorial for her on campus as well, although as of when I last was reading stuff, they hadn't completed it yet.
Okay.
Since 2004, there has been a scholarship to UND in her name as well.
Oh, I love that.
Me too. And then on July 27th, 2006... then-President George W. Bush signed the Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act into law.
Mm-hmm.
Inside that law was what they called Drew's Law, which changed the name of the National Sex Offender Public Registry to the Drew Shadeen National Sex Offender Public website, which, in quotes, provides information to the public on the whereabouts of registered sex offenders regardless of state, territory, or tribal boundaries.
Yes.
So you can Google it basically now, instead of needing to go through the state to figure out if there are sex offenders in your neighborhood or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that it would have saved Drew, but it might have. They might have known where to look quicker.
Yeah.
I don't know. But.
And so there's still missing pieces of where he.
Yeah.
And. So if you are already going to serve, why? I don't understand why people hang on to stuff. Just tell the family what.
Well, and in this case, I wonder a little bit if that's part of why they're questioning his mental capacity.
Sure.
I mean, plus like the drug use as a young person. But yeah, for him to like, he should have never just been released.
No.
With no supervision.
No. I just want to go back to how scary that is, that you have no idea who you are around when you are in public places.
Right.
And that's terrifying.
Yeah, if you think about it too much, you'll never want to leave your house.
Oh God, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I kind of already shared my final thoughts in the middle. But I'll say here too that I really think this is one of a couple of local cases that changed my outlook on strangers, as like it really formulated my outlook on strangers. I should say it didn't change it. It formed it.
Mm-hmm.
I was a kid solidly in the stranger danger era in Minnesota started with the kidnapping of Jacob Wetterling.
Yes.
And then went through my college years when this happened. And then next week's case too, which we're covering Natalie Holloway next week.
Yeah.
Just made me like terrified to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, go to the mall, go on vacation, go for a bike ride.
Yeah.
Like all of those things were the things that happened in these three cases where people were taken. And it's been really hard to like undo that.
Yeah.
Like I still am like way too hyper aware in especially crowded public settings.
Yeah.
I think that's like, it's become social anxiety basically.
Yeah.
For me. And like we talked about earlier, like it's starting to finally shift where like, it's no longer the victim's fault. It doesn't matter if my hair's up. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If I'm wearing a hood that someone could grab, that was another thing that people used to say. Like if you're wearing a hoodie, they could grab the hood.
Oh God.
Like it's all these things that you had to protect yourself basically. Cause no one's going to look out for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is also just horrible. But yeah, I've just like never been able to shake the feeling of danger.
Yeah.
Like walking at night, walking in open parking lots, walking anywhere. So what did you think of this story?
Truly knowing, which you and I talked about this off air earlier this week, that the amount of things that I am unaware of that have happened in my lifetime is honestly scary, because even at 10, I knew nothing about this. I don't remember any of this. But I do remember specifically standing in the mall where we grew up. My back was to like the Claire's, which was on a corner. So it was like basically in the center of this mall. Mm-hmm. And I remember having like my fake little, well, not fake purse, but like my purse was sitting on the bench. And I just remember thinking to myself, my back is to the public. My hair is in a ponytail.
Yeah.
I'm doing all these things wrong that someone, I don't remember who, I'm assuming mom and dad, but I don't remember, has told me I'm doing everything wrong. And if I get taken, it's my fault. Like I remember having this feeling.
Yeah.
And I assume, because I think I was like 12 or 13.
I mean,
my back is to everybody. I'm so vulnerable right now.
And like me being aware of it, I'm sure mom and dad were aware of it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. So,
like, I wonder if, even if you don't really remember it, there's some, like, subconscious part of you.
Yeah.
That, like, heard about it.
Yeah.
Somewhere on the radio, on the news.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you, for you to be like that, have that in your brain.
Yeah, it's a very distinct memory I have. Like, I can see me looking down at my purse and being like, get your shit together, turn the fuck around.
Yeah.
Because if you get taken, it's going to be your fault.
Which is, I'm so glad that is starting to shift.
Yeah.
Because it's, if you're kidnapped, it's not your fault.
And then without knowing it, the bystander effect would happen.
Yes.
You know, without me knowing what the bystander effect was.
Yeah.
What's
really interesting that I've had to like unlearn is the least safe time to be out in the public is not at night. It's in the early morning.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And that's like it seems counterintuitive to me.
Yeah.
Like I'm much more afraid to take the dogs out at like 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
than I am at 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And that is backwards.
Right. Yeah. It's like I don't want to go to the gas station at 9 o'clock at night. I will if I have to, but I go there three times a week at 5:30 in the morning.
Yep.
By myself on my way to work.
Yep. And it's probably less safe at 5:30 a.m. than it is at 9 p.m., which is like, that's been, as a runner, that's been really difficult for me to like wrap my head around, knowing that like when I'm running at 6 a.m, I'm more vulnerable than if I got my ass out at 10 p.m. Which I'm never going to do because I eat too much during the day. But that's a different story. So it's just been, I don't know. I've been trying to like in my adulthood kind of reevaluate some of this stuff that I learned. I remember the scariest thing that I ever did in college, and this is going to sound ridiculous probably to you, was when I would study too late in the science building, because it would be like 10:30, 11 p.m. and I'd have to walk across campus. Remember that tiny campus that I was on? But like, it felt scary.
Yeah.
And I think it was just because of what we were taught as women, that no one's going to look out for us.
Yeah.
So we have to look out for ourselves.
Yes.
And this was like the early days of Take Back the Night. And I think I saw an early production of like the Vagina Monologues. Like, it was so early in like my feminist education that like I didn't know that everything I was thinking was so backwards.
Yeah. 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 And you, yeah.
And yeah, I just, I hope that people going, like young women going off to college or going into their first job and all this stuff now, at least have a sense that like, if something happens to me, it isn't my fault.
Yeah. And that's, I should say that too. I remember thinking it would be my fault. I know it's not my fault. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah.
But I remember, yeah, thinking at that age that like, no one's going to help me, and it's going to be 100% my fault. And that's not true.
No, that's not true.
You want to know whose fault it is? The person that fucking took you.
Yes.
And no one else's.
Right.
So.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's probably a good place to end this one, honestly.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
If something happens to you, it's not your fault.
No.
Should I go into sources?
Yes, please.
Okay. So one of the sources I did not quote at the beginning, because I didn't want to give the story away too much, is I did look at the website for the Drew Shadeen National Sex Offender Public website. So there's a little bio of Drew on there, and it tells about the law and stuff. So that was helpful in learning about that.
Of course.
On ABC News, I read a little summary called Missing from the Mall, How Investigators Nabbed a Serial Rapist in the Death of a College Student by Ivan Pereira. In the Bismarck Tribune, an article called Two Decades Later, Drew Shadeen Case Still Resonates in Grand Forks and Across the Nation by Sav Kelly. In CBS News, an article called Alfonso Rodriguez Convicted of Killing Drew Shadeen Moved from Death Row to Florida Prison by the Associated Press. And then also in CBS News, but this is like a 20-year-old article called Suspect Charged in Shadeen Murder by the Associated Press. In the Twin Cities Pioneer Press, I read an article called 2 years after Drew Shadeen's killer's sentence overturned, review of medical examiner's work continues by Mara H. Gottfried. In the Duluth News Tribune, this was about the 2020 episode. It said, tonight, 2020 taking a close look at timeline of Drew Shadeen's case in Missing from the Mall by Trisha Torinskas. This is showing that this was more nationwide than I realized. This article was from Cairo 7, which is a news article or news outlet out of Seattle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it said, death penalty tossed in 2003 abduction murder of North Dakota college student Drew Shadeen by Crystal Bonvillian. In the Valley News Live, which is from the Fargo area, an article called Community Remembers Drew Shadeen on 20-Year Anniversary of Her Disappearance by Zoe Jones. And then on Fox 9 News, which is from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, an article called Drew Shadeen, Death Sentence Reduced to Life in Prison for Minnesotan Who Killed North Dakota Student by the Associated Press. I did watch the episode of 2020. It was very well done. It interviewed her brother and her dad and some of her friends, some of her sorority sisters. So it was very well done. It was season 46, episode 12, and it's called Missing from the Mall. It's on Hulu. That's where I watched it.
Okay.
So it was very good. The episode of True Crime All the Time, was that podcast was called The Murder of Drew Shadeen. and the episode of the No is a Sentence podcast. It's a really interesting podcast that covers cases specifically of like sexual assault and things like that, which is like No is a Sentence. It's just,
yeah, when you said that at the beginning, cool. I was like, wow, I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah, so this was episode 51 called Drew Shadeen. And then I looked at some stuff on Wikipedia, but I mostly found my info from these other articles.
Mm. Well, that was one, I mean, wonderfully told. You told it so well. Yeah, it just, so scary.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like, I don't know if you ever listened to My Favorite Murder. I don't need more, but I used to. They have what they call hometown murders.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of feels like my hometown murder.
Yeah.
Like, this is the one that I think about probably more than I should. Like, it just has stuck with me for 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah. I mean, especially, yeah, being old enough to understand what's going on and then to then know in a few years you're also going to be doing those same things, going to college. Getting your license, then going to college, you know, working to get through college, you know, all these things. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, wonderfully told story, Sissy. And thank you again for another week, another episode.
Yep. And like I mentioned, next week, Natalie Holloway.
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah.
We're going to need snackies.
We're going to need snackies for that one. That's for sure.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find us on Instagram at A Most Wanted Podcast, where we post some true crime trivia every Sunday. You can follow us on X, or formerly known as Twitter, at A Most Wanted Pod. Find us and like us on Facebook at A Most Wanted Podcast. You can send us an email at amostwantedpodcast@gmail.com. And please remember to visit our website at A Most Wanted Podcast. And remember, please listen, subscribe, and love. Bye.